This season of the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast is proudly supported by My Music Staff.
Welcome to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast, the place where teachers from around the world meet to share innovative ideas about music education. Listen and learn as we help you motivate your students, grow your income, expand your studio, and become a more creative piano teacher.
Welcome back to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast, your weekly dose of creative inspiration, fun conversation, and teaching tactics for your piano studio. We'll help you keep motivated and inspired as you teach and run your business and give you the confidence you need to explore new ideas, teach more creatively, and grow the studio of your dreams. My name is Tim Topham, your host for the show, and you're listening to episode number 159, and a special shout out to my Inner Circle Piano Teaching Community members. Today's guest is talking all about motivating teenagers with cool music. You may well have heard of my guest today, who I'll introduce in just a moment. He's been prolific in the area of providing cool music for teenagers, and we unpack exactly how he got into this, how he goes about creating music, what really inspires teenagers, and indeed, he also offers a very special discount for his music at the end of the episode, so tune in for that too. Today's show notes and a full transcript are available now at timtopham.com/episode159. My guest today is the founder of musicmotivation.com, a company he formed to provide music instruction through workshops, giving speeches and seminars, and concerts and performances in the field of music and motivation. He is a composer, author, poet, and music mentor and piano teacher, primarily focusing his piano teaching on music theory, improvisation, composition, and arranging. He loves spending time with his wife, Zanny, and their children, and in addition, he loves music, teaching, speaking, performing, playing sports, exercising, reading, writing poetry,
and welcome to the show, Gerald Simon. Thank you so much for coming on today and having a chat.
I'm happy to be here.
That's very good. It's been a little while coming. I've known about your work for, it's been 2 or 3 years, I think. You've been plugging away and creating composition, after book. And of course, the great thing is that for those of you who don't know you, and we'll find out more about you shortly, you have very similar ideals, particularly when it comes to teenagers, pop, keeping them motivated, all that kind of stuff, as I do. So I'm really looking forward to our chat. I just did want to ask you too, because while our audience can't see you, I thought you kind of looked a bit like Tom Cruise. Has anyone told you that before?
I've heard that before. You're not the first to say that, but yes.
There you go. Now everyone can picture what you look like
as I'm.
So look, for those who aren't familiar with you and your company, Music Motivation, tell us where you're based, what you do, what your studio looks like, and some of those goodies.
Perfect. Well, I'm based out of Utah in the USA, and I live in a small little city that's about 15 minutes north of Salt Lake City, to kind of give everyone a general idea of where I live. And I have a studio in my home. And you can see behind me, this is one of my recording studios / weight room in the way back.
I thought it looked like a gym as well. Yeah.
It's a man cave down here, but it's wonderful. To the side over here, I have drums and keyboards and guitars and banjos, accordions, weird things like that. But I enjoy it. It's fun. It's great.
And with all those instruments, do you have small groups of students or just one-on-one?
So usually I do one-on-one with the students, but many times I will have some that come in groups, and then we will actually have jam sessions where I've had it before where I've been on the electric guitar, one of my piano students has been on the piano, and then one of my other piano students who plays drums sat down and started playing the drums, and we had a great jam session. It was a lot of fun.
So. Yeah, it's very cool. I do like getting on other instruments if they are around while a piano student's playing. And even if that's on my second keyboard, just hitting some strings or setting up a drum beat or something like that, to have the actual real instruments and be able to play them, well, that's, I think, even cooler. And you've got a lot of lighting. I can see umbrella lights like you see when you have portraits
done. Yeah, we've got a lot of lighting. I do a lot of filming down here when I'm coming out with my weekly videos from my cool song series that I come out with. But yeah, I have 2 lights that are hooked to the ceiling, and then I have 4 lights that are surrounding. So it gets pretty bright. I don't have the lights on right now, but when the lights are on, it's very bright.
Yes. So the videos that you're recording, where do you release those?
You know, I began releasing those starting about 2009, 2010. I started filming myself a little bit, but that was when I started composing my cool songs as they have become known by others. And it's kind of funny how that evolved.
Well, tell us this story, because I'm really keen to know, because you've literally created so many cool songs, as you call them. I don't even know how you keep churning them out, but tell us the story of why you started this.
Yeah, no, that's great. What began for me, initially, I came out with two books. I came out with, and this was back in 2007, 2008. I came out with a book called An Introduction to Scales and Modes. And not very exciting. I mean, it had
like the least exciting book title. I'm sorry to say,
probably not the most exciting book, and I liked it. But I came out with that book, and then I came out with a book called Variations on Mary Had a Little Lamb, where I had 9 different arrangements. In part, primarily because of the Mary Had a Little Lamb book I came out with. At the time, I was teaching about 40 to 50 piano students, which is where I am now. You know, I have about 40 to 50.
Wow, you still have 40 to 50 with all the work you're doing.
I keep cutting back. Wow. So it could go down a little bit. But what happened is I actually, and no teacher should do this, but I started having piano teachers contact me and ask me if I would start teaching some of their students who hated the piano. And I said, sure. I said, I'd love to. So I went at the time, and this was back about 2007, 2008. I went from having about 50 students to having almost 100 piano students. Those are not groups. Those are one-on-one piano students. Again, we're talking 10 to 12 hour days, and no piano teacher should ever do that. I'm sorry. And I only did it for maybe a year or two, but what happened was I had these students, more than half of my studio hated the piano. I mean, I'm not talking that they did not want to practice or they were having a tough time. They would literally sit down at the piano, fold their arms and say, I'm not touching the piano. I hate the piano.
Sorry, hang on. I've got to interrupt you here, because had other teachers refer these students to you. So which kind of is a good thing, I guess, that they realized they weren't the right teacher for that student. But exactly. What on earth were they doing to make it so bad for them?
Well, what happened was, and see, the kids did not hate the piano, but they told me they hated the piano. And it was because of their experience. In many ways, many of them were being taught the way their teacher had been taught 60 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so they were not being able to choose music. They were not allowed to play by ear or to play pop music from the radio. And so the teachers, thankfully, to their credit, they recommended me and they said, you know, we want you to essentially try to save the students, you know, so don't quit. And the parents said, this is kind of a last ditch effort. You know, after this, we'll probably just let them quit or stop or do whatever they decide. Yeah. And so I said, okay. But these kids would not play anything. And I had, at the time, I only had the two books, and I tried different method books. I tried different songs, even allowing them to select pop songs. And I think at this point, they were beyond even caring. Mm-hmm. So they just wouldn't accept it and they would not do it. So for me, as a piano teacher, I had a problem. I did not know how to motivate and inspire these kids. And it did not matter what I did. You know, it was like pulling teeth. You can't get them to do it. And I know many other teachers feel the same way, where they're, especially during those teenage years, and most of these piano students were teenage boys between the ages of 12 and 19, and they were busy, but at the same time, they thought they did not want to play the piano. And I had an idea. And what happened is, one day during one of the piano students' lessons, I turned to him and I said, let's try something completely different. And I said, I'm going to compose a song right now during your lesson. You can tell me what style of music you want me to compose. You tell me what key signature. You tell me what notes to use, what chords, and then I'll compose it for you and print it out in Finale and send it home with you. But you have to play it. And so that was my big idea.
Yeah.
And he said, okay. And he kind of laughed. For me, it became a challenge. For him, it was more of a game.
Yeah.
And so he gave me a few ideas, a few notes. And
so you managed to get that much out of him?
I managed to get that much out of him.
Okay. Did he choose did he know a nasty key to make you? Oh, no, he was going to have to learn it though, wasn't he?
He was going to have to play it, exactly. So
that would have backfired.
It would have backfired. But what he did is he actually told me, and it was funny because he said, I only want to use four notes and I want it to sound like video game. Mm. And for me, I thought, I'm in trouble here, you know, only four notes and it has to sound like a video game. And he actually did this. I don't know if you can hear that very well.
Yeah, we can. Yep.
Good. So he played just C, A flat, F, and G. And he said, that's it. Those four notes. And I thought, okay, that doesn't give me a whole lot to go on. And then he said, I'll give you one more note. And I begged him. I said, please just give me something else. And this is what he did. And he said, and I said, you want me to compose something that sounds like a video game song using C, A flat, F, G, B? And he said, yes. But then he said, you can only use that B four times in the entire.
And so he was laughing about it being a game.
Oh, exactly. And he was laughing. And for me, I took it as a challenge. And I said, okay. And I said, what if we did this? And this is what I did. I played that. And I said, I'll change the rhythm. But what I want you to do is, with the right hand, just go back and forth from C to G. And I said, I will throw in the B only four times in the piece. But I did this. And then we went through and repeated the song, and instantly he went from laughing to smiling. Mm-hmm. Instantly, just from doing that much. And I went over to the computer and I actually notated it and printed it out. I sent it home with him and I said, I just want you to learn this. And if you learn it, I want you to play it for a friend or play it for your family. When he came back the next week, not only had he learned it, it was perfected. It was polished. Mm-hmm. And he had played it for his family and he had played it for friends. And he even brought a friend back with him to the lesson who asked if he could start taking piano lessons from me. And so, I mean, it really was kind of a shift. And I asked what he thought of this new piece. And he said this, he said, it sounds cool. Mm-hmm. And I said, it sounds cool. And that's where the cool songs idea came from, because I began composing a new cool song in every piano lesson with my students and then sending it home with them. And each time they would always say, it sounds cool.
Yeah.
And so it became a turning point for me, because this student in particular, the week before, he said he hated the piano. And then he said to me, if I had more music that sounded like this, I would play the piano more.
Yeah, really. So what a great story, Gerald. Yeah. And like, a lot of what you said echoes with things that I do with students. I've got a number of those teenagers whose parents call and say, look, he or she's about to quit. Can you try? And I've sometimes had lessons and they haven't gone very well and they've tried to pull out and I'm like, no, wait, I can do more. Right. And normally I'll be able to pull them back in. I don't think I've failed too many times, but what I do is work out what they like and help them play what they like. You know, it's quite simple really,
yeah.
But being able to find the repertoire quickly that connects with that student, that can be where the challenge lies. And so it's fantastic that you've notated all of these and you're actually making them available. I wonder, if I play devil's advocate for a moment, I know teachers listening who heard what you played might think that, oh, that music's a bit boring and repetitive. And what are they going to learn about their phrasing and technique from playing Gerald's music if it's like that? So what would you say to that?
Perfect. No, that's great. That is one example. I actually have songs that are new age pieces. I have songs that are classical, contemporary classical. I have a lot of different styles and genres. And part of it with the teachers, I tell them, I want the students to learn. In my opinion, I want them to be able to read anything that they see. But I always tell piano teachers, that's not the end all final destination. Because once they can read music as it is, I tell them I want them to be able to make it their own. That is how the students connect with music, when they can arrange it. And music is all about patterns, creating different left-hand patterns where you can move up and down, and teaching them blues, teaching them jazz, teaching them how to take a song and play it, you know, 5 different ways, 10 different ways, 50 different ways, where they can take one song and they can play around with it. Mm. And it's fun to teach them how to do that, where they can play by ear. And so there are so many different ways that you can connect with different students, like you said, according to what they want.
Right.
Find what style of music they want to play, because that's the first step. Mm. Ask what they want to play. So.
Yeah, and I look at it as a hook as well, more than a complete curriculum, because I found that you can hook that boy in with that track that you just played then. And after a couple more of those tracks, then you can throw in a bit of classical that maybe has some repeating patterns and they go, oh, this is cool. And suddenly you've re-motivated them to all aspects of playing piano, not just that style of piece.
And the fun thing is, you know, like you said, you're hooking them. What you're doing is you're trying to get them excited about something that sounds cool to them, that they can also start to play for their friends. I had a piano student one time, another piano student who came to me. His mother was a piano teacher. And the first thing he said to me is, I will not play classical music. Mm-hmm. And I said, that's fine. I said, well, we'll take a break from playing classical music. And I said, we'll play some pop music or jazz. And he really wanted to learn jazz. So we started working on the blues scale and working on some chord progressions, like a 2-5-1 jazz chord progression. And after 2 or 3 years, he started working on Rachmaninoff and Debussy and Chopin. And he made this complete transition and this complete twist and turn. And it was fantastic because in his first lesson, he said, I will never play classical music again. And yet 2 years later, after taking from me, we were working on Clair de Lune and we were working on other pieces, but it was the jazz that hooked him, helped him get excited, that then he could start to pursue other interests. And sometimes at that age, classical music may not connect with them and they may not connect with the music. And then later on, they start to grow into it. So it depends.
Yeah. And if in that interim period, we've said, if you're not doing classical, you can't do anything, then you've lost them. They will never have that chance probably to come back and never try classical again because they've dropped out of the system. And so I love your focus on finding what matches up with the student, because it is so crucial and pivotal to how I teach as well. And I hope teachers listening, who most of them are already doing this kind of thing, I know, because I hear from them. But if you aren't, and you're still very focused on a set curriculum, a set of repertoire that you perhaps learnt and think is important, but the student isn't connecting with it, please find some music that connects with that student to keep them playing. Even if you don't particularly like it and you think it's a bit thumpy or repetitive or whatever it is, it's okay if they're playing. You can always come back to that stuff later on, but if you lose them, they're gone.
Oh, it's so true. And to see that spark, you know, to help the student really get excited and to see a smile come on their face. I had a student earlier today that he had never played jazz, and we started doing kind of a blues and throwing in some 2-5-1. And we just started throwing around, playing around with it a bit. And he was so excited. And again, what we were doing is we were taking the theory, and I like to call it the practical application of music theory. Mm-hmm. You have theory on one hand, but what can you do with it? Mm. And so it's helping the students understand, if I have a C sixth chord, can I break it apart and add a walking bass pattern? You know, can I play root position, first inversion, second inversion, third inversion? And then can I create a different sound by doing that? It's theory. That's all it is. It's helping them take what they're learning, the theory aspect, and then they start to apply it. And it's fun for them because then theory is not this curse word that thought it is.
Yeah. Well, back in episode one this season, I talked to Gloria Saint-Germain, who does Ultimate Music Theory, all about my focus on making theory as practical as possible. And we've actually, through this this series on the podcast, a number of people have brought this up about making those connections between theory and practice, and that how that strengthens students' understanding of music. And the more we can get them to put the theory into practice with things like that, the better, 100%.
Yeah, I completely agree. It is wonderful.
Now, a quick word from our sponsor, My Music Staff. Most of you have already heard about My Music Staff and how their software helps thousands of music teachers manage their businesses more efficiently. They handle all of your student management issues, scheduling, billing, and so much more. It's what I personally use in my own studio, and it's no surprise why it's the leading studio management software. What I think really makes My Music Staff stand out is its community-driven development and personal approach to customer support. It was such a pleasant surprise jumping into My Music Staff for the first time and realizing how in tune it was with my business and the ins and outs of a music studio. Since they partner with the music community to develop their software, they've been able to anticipate what teachers need and are constantly improving their software to exceed expectations. And a more recent example of responding to community feedback was the addition of a very popular feature, streaming video and audio files directly within the My Music Staff app. And that means that no longer do you have to download files to your device. So it makes it incredibly easy to share content with your students. My Music Staff is super easy to get up and running. The transition away from paper and spreadsheets is painless. If you do need help, the quality of support is second to none, and you'll always get a fully personalized response. I have yet to see the level of attention and care I receive from My Music Staff provided by any other software platforms I use, and I use a lot of software in my business. So what have you got to lose? Just go to mymusicstaff.com and sign up for their free 30-day trial today. Now, you mentioned earlier that you like students to take ownership of the song, your cool songs that they play. Do you have instructions about how teachers could do that? Because I know that can getting right off the page can be a bit of a challenge sometimes.
Yeah, for me, what I like to do is with each of the cool songs, so I have, right now I have four different books. I have a primer level, book one, book two, book three. Each book has 21 cool songs that I've composed. But on top of that, I have an additional 86 cool songs that are not in any books right now. They all have minus tracks and drums and things, but each one has the theory concept. Right below the title, I actually introduce and explain what the theory is we're learning in that piece.
Ah, great.
Because I tell the students, I want them to know what they're doing. And so I explain and say, okay, in this exercise or this cool song, we're working on maybe a broken fifth interval, and we start talking about a melodic fifth interval or a harmonic fifth interval, and we start explaining what it is. And I notate that on the PDF or in the printed book right below the title so that they can explain, and the teachers can then explain to the students what the theory concept is. It's kind of an all-inclusive where they have the music, but then they have the practical application with the theory included.
Yeah, that's great. I know you've got a lot of videos as well on, I think on YouTube, or is it on your website, of you teaching and playing this music?
Yeah, it's on both. It's on YouTube. My YouTube channel is youtube.com/GeraldSimon, GeraldSimon. But it's also on my website as well, if they just go to musicmotivation.com.
Yeah. And I find listening to you play and also teach concepts of the songs that you've created really brings them to life, even for me as a teacher. And I also wanted to talk about your backing tracks, because you aren't just a piano composer. You create these amazing orchestral and band backing tracks, which are really quite stunning. And I know how much my students love playing along to backing tracks. I think it's great for their ensemble playing and it's more fun generally. How important to you is the ability for students to play along to backing tracks, and how do you use that in your lessons?
Perfect. Well, for me, I created the backing tracks because I found that the students, I like jamming with other musicians, and I love that connection. And I think you feel a sense of the rhythmic pulse and the beat, and you start to really bring a new heightened sense to the musicality just by playing around. But if you don't have that ability and you don't practice playing with other musicians, then you won't know what that's like. So with these minus tracks, I have drums, I have guitars, I have synth keyboards, and I have all these other some special effects that, you know, there may even be bombs exploding, things happening in the background. But what is so fun for the students is that they get so excited when they're practicing these, because I have the minus tracks set at performance speed, but then also at practice speed, where the tempo is cut in half. So the students can play along and still have that big sound at a slower speed. But then when they want to, I've had students so excited because they will perform at their school talent show using one of my minus tracks. And what they will do is they will just hook up to the school's speaker system. They have the piano there, and then there are four clicks in the beginning, and then they just start playing, and all of a sudden they're playing with drums and guitars, and it makes their performance a much more memorable experience, and they love it. It really gets them excited.
Yeah, and that's so important for students, because then other students go, well, that kid's cool, and go up to them later and say, oh my God, you played, it was amazing. And that means the student gets all that benefit and support. And so they want to play some more, they want to practice more, and it kind of snowballs. So the better we can make and make our students look and sound at recitals, I think the better, particularly at school assemblies. I'm a big fan of that too.
It helps them really boost their self-esteem.
Hugely. You
know? Because instantly that is what connects them to music. It becomes their music that they're sharing with.
And particularly if they are a teenager, let's say they're 14, 15, and they're only, they've either struggled or they've only recently started. So they're not playing things that are that difficult. Right. To then put that child up on stage, you know, playing something really simple without any backing track at their age, I mean, that can be really, even at a student recital, you know, I'd really get, really suggest teachers listening, consider whether that's the best approach. But to instead have them play at that same level, but with a thumping great backing track or some orchestral cinematic score, then that's a completely different story.
Well, and also they don't feel like they're alone. They feel like they have a band playing. Now, I mean, I'm the band, you know, playing all the instruments, but they feel like they have a band accompanying them. And so it's almost like it's not as frightening for them to be up there just by themselves, because they have this sound blasting from the speakers. But it revolutionizes. It's funny because I have parents who have never come to one of my, I call them concerts, not piano recitals, but concerts. And I have new parents that they'll come and they'll say, I was expecting a traditional piano recital, and I came and all of a sudden we have the speakers blasting and they're playing with drums and guitars. And they said, I've never seen anything like it. And so for the parents, it's a big boost as well, where the parents can say, wow, this is different.
Well, and they'll probably have more fun too, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's always a good thing. Did you say you compose and release one of these a week or a month?
So I initially did one per week, where I was coming out with a new cool song every single week. Right now I'm coming out with one to two every single month, where I've kind of cut back a little bit. But every week I release, I refer to them as piano fundamentals, where I have videos on YouTube where I teach music theory and show chords and scales. But then I say, well, here's what you can do with it, where I will teach like a fifth interval. You know, if students learn a fifth interval, you know, C to G, that's great. And then if they learn a pentascale, C, D, E, F, G, that's wonderful. But I tell students, who cares? What can you do with that? You know, what is the practical application? So then I tell them, what if you did that broken fifth interval, C to G? And what if you follow a chord progression like C, A, F, G? And then with the right hand, I tell them, take C, D, E, F, G, and play them any order you want, any rhythm. It sounds good. So then they come up with something like this. And all of a sudden, they're composing something and it becomes their music. When I was younger, most of my piano teachers, they would have me working on my pieces. And then I would perform them at the recitals. I had one piano teacher that allowed me to perform my own song at my piano recital. And that motivated me more than anything, because I had people who would come up to me and say, you wrote that? That was your song? And they would say, your song sounded so great, as opposed to you played Beethoven beautifully, which is fine, but yeah. It was, I just played Beethoven, whereas this way, it was my song. It was my piece. And that really motivated me as a teenager.
Yes. And I was listening to your demonstration before and thinking, that's actually quite complex, the syncopation you were using in your right hand. One thing that I find, and I know listeners will find, that if they have tried this style of composing with students, getting them to put it hands together in sync and keep the rhythm consistent can be a challenge. So how do you go about that? Do you simplify things? Where's a better starting spot?
So a better starting spot is just to play with the right hand. Now I was playing eighth notes. I'll have the students play whole notes with the right hand and then do like eighth notes with the left hand, where they have... And so
they're changing at the same time
because, and I will tell them many times, I will say, hold up your hand and just 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then I will have them on a piece of paper, write down numbers 1 through 5, any order they want, where they will write down 1, 5, 2, 3, 4. And then with the right hand, they'll just play 1, 5, 2, 3, 4. And they're just playing C, G, D, E, F. They're playing a C major pentascale, and we talk about the theory, but then they're learning how to apply it and how to play around.
Yeah.
And so, something I do with my students to help them with their rhythm, especially, back there by those lights, I have two different conga drums, and they're big, tall conga drums. I have two sets, one that I like to use and one that I have my students use. And I will put their music on a stand behind the conga drums, and I will say, your left hand is going to play the bass clef, and your right hand is going to tap out the rhythm of the treble clef. So then I have them just play their piano music on the conga drums, where the left hand is essentially just playing the rhythm from the bass clef, and the right hand playing the rhythm from the treble clef. And it really is a blast, because all of a sudden, they're not playing the piano and playing the notes, they're focusing on the rhythm. And it really helps them improve their rhythm. And that applies to piano. So, and
infinitely more interesting than closing the piano lid and tapping on that.
Much, exactly, exactly.
Yeah, no, that's great. So look, I think we might start wrapping things up, but I did want to ask you, you know, I've seen on your website, you've got your top 20 tips, I think it is, for motivating teenagers. I don't think we've got time for 20, but can you pick your favorite, I don't know, two or three to share with us now?
Perfect. What I would probably do with my favorite 2 to 3, I have, and I'm going to come over here just for a second on my website, where I'm going to show you this. I'll just read it as I'm explaining this. Mm. But in that blog post, I actually list 20 different ways that parents or piano teachers can help motivate and inspire their teens, especially teenage boys. And one I talk about is to teach pop, rock, jazz, blues, ragtime, where they can help students branch out, learn different styles. If I have a new student, I will say, what styles do you like to play? And they look at me and say, well, I don't know what you mean. And I say, well, what do you like to listen to? And what do you, and many times that is something that they will be shocked. And I will say, I want you to choose 1 to 2 songs of your own that you want to play this month. And they'll say anything. And I say anything. You know, you can choose something from Justin Bieber or, you know, anyone that they want. And I will let them choose the music. And I will tell them, if we can't find music at your level, we'll just turn on YouTube or turn on your iPod right on your phone. And we'll just listen to the MP3 and then see if we can play it by ear. And it helps them in so many ways. They start listening to music in a completely different way. Mm-hmm. And when you're having a student try to listen to something and play by ear, what I will do is I will tell them first to pick out the melody, where they can either hum the melody and then they can try to pick out the melody on the piano, and then figure out the chord progression. If they have those two separate things, then they can start to embellish and create from there. And many times I have a recorder or a ukulele or a guitar right next to the piano, and I will pick up my recorder and I will just play things on the recorder, and then they have to mimic or parrot what I'm playing. So it's kind of like follow the leader. Maybe in my case, Simon Says, but they have to do what I do musically. And I just play a melody on the recorder and then they play it on the piano. It is so exciting for them to connect to music in that way. And so that's a great way to motivate them. Mm. Another way to do
just,
it is...
Sorry, just on that one, Gerald, too. I think a mistake that many teachers make with the best intentions is when a student wants to learn something that's too difficult, they'll take the music and go away themselves and spend hours rearranging them and bring back another score.
No. Yes. And many times the score that they bring back may not be as fun and cool and as exciting as what initially they had, but at the same time, they've gone to so much work, so much extra work.
Mm. And from my perspective, the students learn nothing through the process. And that's why I think it's much better to do that kind of simplification, trying to do it with the student and use your ears. And so I agree wholeheartedly.
Yeah. And they enjoy it. They really do. Mm. So, but it's fun to teach them simple patterns by rote. And then once they learn those patterns, I'll tell students, if you can play this in the key of C without music, try it in every key, and they'll learn a simple pattern. As an example, the blues scale, and I know you know the C blues scale. The way I like to teach them, I will say, play a C minor triad, C, E flat, G, with your 1, 2, 5 fingering. And so I'll have them play that, and then I just say, your fourth finger is half a step below the pinky, and your third finger is half a step below the fourth finger. It's the blues pentascale. Mm. Well, I tell them, if you can do that, it's the first 5 notes of the full blues scale. And if they can do that and start to swing, we practice and kind of work on. Da, 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 da. Sometimes I say it's like a drunken sailor. Not that I would know what a drunken sailor was like, but it helps them visualize and see what it is. But then I say, try it on F. Just follow the same pattern.
Using your ears.
And they start to see, and they play an F minor chord, fourth finger, half step below the pinky, third finger, half step below the fourth finger, and they start using their ears and hearing, and instantly they start playing and noodling around, which is one of the best things that the students can do to get them excited and motivate them.
Absolutely. All right, should we finish with one more? Have you got I know you've got lots of different ideas that we could use, but one more of your favorites?
one more of my favorites. I like to teach, well, the three main areas I like to focus on. One I tell students is music theory. I call it theory therapy. The second is improvisation. I refer to it as innovative improvisation. And the last one is composing, and I call it creative composition. One of the best things you can do to motivate and inspire a piano student of any age is to ask them to compose something of their own. You know, however difficult, and they don't even need to be at the level where they're notating it and putting it down on paper. You know, they can get there, but just create something. I've had students that they'll create something, and I say, that's great, that's wonderful. And then they will ask me, can we create a little music video for it? And I tell them, absolutely. Mm. And so we'll start to film them and kind of create this, even if we're here in the studio, and we'll kind of create this little music video. And then with their permission and their parents' permission, many times I will even ask if I can share it on my social media sites. And my students love that, because then they start saying, oh, look, someone commented on this, or someone liked this, or put a thumbs up. And instantly they feel like they are a rock star. So it's one way to really help the students, because you are helping them create something, but then you're helping them to share it. And I've even told students, if you want, I will help you learn how to notate your music. And I've had students that we've taken their own songs, put it on sheet music to sell a PDF. And I have some that we've even put it on iTunes. We've been able to get their music recorded and kind of put it on iTunes. And that, there's nothing better to motivate a student than to hear their own music.
Mm, fantastic. So, nice way to summarize all the stuff that you're doing. And I know there is heaps more. And we'll put links to your blog post about motivating teenagers. It's interesting. I was just been thinking in the course of the last 45 minutes or so that we've come at the same problem from two different directions, but they're kind of interlinked. So you saw this issue where you were getting students from teachers who didn't understand the pop music, and you created the music which would help teachers.
Right. Yeah.
I saw this was happening, and I had teachers coming to me saying, how do I do this? So I created the training courses to teach them how to do it.
Right.
And so I think together we've covered both potential bases, the teachers that really need the music but don't, maybe want to dig into the theory of teaching it so much, and the teachers who really want to teach it. So I think, high five, virtual one from us, for us.
Virtual. And I love everything you are doing, from your webinars to everything you're putting out. Your content is wonderful. It's fantastic.
Well, cheers, so, Gerald. Thank you very much. Really appreciate it. And I know just before we finish that you do have a special offer for all our listeners today. So can you let us know what that is?
Perfect. Yeah. On my website, musicmotivation.com, if anyone would like to order anything and use a special coupon, your name.
That's Tim my Topham, name. So Tim
that's
Topham.
That's your name.
Tim Topham, yep. One word, not their name.
Your name. Yeah. Use Tim Topham and they will get a 20% off discount on anything they purchase, whenever they purchase anything from my website.
Oh, that is super. Thank you so much, Gerald. That is very, very generous. TimTopham. We'll put that code and all the links you need in our show notes for today. Gerald, thank you so much for coming on tonight. It's been great.
Thank you so much. I've enjoyed it.
I do hope you'll take up Gerald's fantastic offer of his discount on his music. I've played through a number of his pieces. I've shared them with my students as well. And there's no doubt that sort of pattern-based approach and that film score, moody style of music really does appeal to students. And of course, as he said, he has music in all sorts of different varieties and genres. So definitely go and check that out. Now, if you haven't left a Facebook or iTunes review for my work, I would be absolutely delighted if you got a chance to do that today. It only takes a couple of minutes. And if you're a little bit unsure about how to do either of those things, then all you need to do is head to timtopham.com/iTunes and all the details will be there for you. I look forward to reading it. Next week on the podcast is our last episode for season one, 2019, which is a little bit sad. It's been a fantastic season. I do hope you have enjoyed our discussions to date. We're finishing off with a bang because a very special guest returns for her fourth podcast. Yes, it's the one and only Samantha Coates, who joined us last year for a series of three podcasts. And in this episode, she's talking all about rote teaching. Now, if you think you know about rote teaching and how it links in with normal teaching, then I want you to think again, because in this discussion, Sam opened my eyes to some of the other ways that rote teaching can really inspire and motivate students and get them reading down the track in a much faster way. So tune in next week to hang out with me and Samantha on the podcast. I'm Tim Topham, and this is the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. Thank you very much for tuning in, and I'll see you next week. Just before you go, if you've enjoyed today's show, I'd love for you to check out my Inner Circle Piano Teaching Community. It's the go-to resource for piano teachers looking to continue their professional development, connect with other teachers and experts around the world, and to access hundreds of world-class training resources, including our academy courses, lesson plans, teaching videos, technology help, and much more. Whether you're just starting out or have been working hard to build your studio for a while, the Inner Circle community will give you the skills, support, and confidence you need to grow the studio of your dreams. Whether that's just about teaching a small number of students one-on-one in your home, or about hiring a commercial space, employing other teachers, and building an entire music teaching empire. With courses on both the teaching and business side of running your studio, live coaching, and our thriving community forums, you can get quick answers to questions, set yourself challenges, get feedback on your ideas, and feel confident teaching in new and exciting ways. For more info and how to join us inside the circle, head over to timtopham.com/community today. I'll see you on the inside.
We'll conclude this evening's entertainment.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. We'd love to help take your teaching to the next level as a member of our supportive community. Use the coupon Piano Podcast for $100 off an annual membership of Tim's Inner Circle today. To find out more, head to timtopham.com/community.